Welcome back, everyone, to After Hours Let's Talk. I'm your host, Shorty For Real. This is the show where the conversations go deeper, the honesty flows freely, and the soul gets a moment to breathe. Tonight's episode moves into a territory many people feel but don't always know how to language, the meeting point between mental health, spiritual awakening, and the evolution of consciousness. My guest tonight is someone who has lived that intersection, studied it, and teaches from it. Sean Blackwell, author of Bipolar Awakenings, The Quest to Heal Bipolar Disorder, and a holotropic breathwork facilitator, joins us to unpack the connection between the spiritual dimensions and the emotional healing potential that emerges when we explore consciousness beyond the surface level. So tonight we're talking about crisis, awakenings, emotional breakthrough, the unseen intelligence of the psyche, and how mental health support can evolve when we honor the spiritual dimensions of our being. So grab a seat, grab something to drink, get comfortable, and let's dive deep into this conversation. First, we're going to go into what's on your mind tonight. Tonight's listener writes, I've struggled with anxiety and depression for years, and sometimes I feel like there's a deeper meaning or a spiritual layer to what I'm going through. But I'm afraid to say it out loud because it sounds crazy. Is there actually a connection between emotional pain and spiritual awakening? Sean, if you would like to say something to the listener about that.
Sure, and it's a good news, bad news situation because there's absolutely a connection, and in order to awaken, you need to go through your pain, you know, and that's not something a lot of people want to do. So whoever wrote that in is a very wise person because they're already intuiting where they need to go.
Absolutely. I believe that, you know, you definitely cannot have an awakening. There is definitely a connection between the emotional pain, and you have to understand the pain so that you can have that awakening in your life. You know, you gotta first understand what it is that you're feeling, understand or pinpoint the issue so that you can move through it and work through it. And get the connections that you need, whether it be spiritually, mentally, psychologically, you know. So,
And you gotta feel it. You gotta feel it in all of its splendor, you might say. You know.
Absolutely. You do. You have to feel. I don't think that we feel enough sometimes. We like to bury things and distract ourselves from.
Mm-hmm.
Those hard feelings.
Exactly.
So, with that being said, welcome in, Sean. It is a pleasure to have you on here tonight. And would you like to just let our audience know a little bit about yourself before we start our conversation?
Okay. Yeah, my name's Sean, and I have been looking at and teaching people about and researching the spiritual dimension and healing potential of what people normally call bipolar disorder for 18 years. It's been a long time. And I wrote a book about it, about my work with clients, called Bipolar Awakenings, The Quest to Heal Bipolar Disorder. And that's what I've come to talk to you guys about tonight. And I'm looking forward to a 11:30 p.m. It's 11:30 p.m. for me, 11:30 p.m. conversation. I'm a night owl. I was up till 3 a.m. last night. I'll probably be up until 3 a.m. tonight. So thanks for catching me early in the evening.
I love it. All right. So we're going to jump into this conversation. You guys, I've been looking forward to having this conversation with Sean. So I want to talk about the overlap between bipolar experiences and spiritual processes. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, probably the best experience or the best way is with the real life example. And this is how I got into everything, you know, which was my own experience. And what happened was, I'd always kind of had an interest in religion and spirituality. I studied religion a lot in university. I've got a minor in religious studies and studied a lot of religion and sociology. And before that, I was in Catholic schools. So it's always been a big part of my life in some way, you know. But when I was 30, I was at a self-help seminar and they had us do a short 5-minute meditation on our fear. And I didn't think I felt any fear. But while I was in the meditation, I had this sort of flashback to a scuba diving accident I had had 2 months earlier, and I saw my depth gauge. And there was a moment where what had happened was I lost my weight belt at 90 feet below sea level, and I was shooting to the surface, and I was looking at my depth gauge, wondering if I was going to make it to the surface alive. I didn't know. I thought I might die on the way up, because from that depth, you can get an air embolism in your blood. And if that happens, it goes to your brain and you die. So that's where my head was at on this scuba diving accident. And then it all came back during this meditation. And then all of a sudden, I felt a punch at my chest. And I was flooded with emotion, flooded with fear. And I was crying and really allowing the pain that I had repressed from that accident to surface, you know. And there was a good reason for not feeling the fear in the moment was I had to relax, because if I didn't, I could have died. You know, because if you tense up or you feel the fear, you could stop breathing. And when you do that, the oxygen expands in your lungs and creates the embolism. So you got to relax and keep exhaling. And that's what I did. I simply could not allow myself to feel the fear to survive. But then in this process, it all came up. And once it was done, there was a sense of kind of all-knowingness, and I felt like I knew things I never knew before. I also felt that, my senses had all sharpened. I could see detail in things I couldn't see before. For example, I could see detail in curtains that I couldn't see before, this kind of thing, just a lot. And my sense of smell was sharper. And I went home from the course this one night and was really opening up to my parents about some family issues, super vulnerable. I was writing in a notebook until 4 a.m. And this whole kind of process continued for 5 days. The whole time I was on the course, I was kind of in this space. And then on the last day of the course, I realized that this is the kind of information I had at this point, because I felt so good. I felt so complete that this is how you must feel when you die. And then I just snapped into it. I was like, oh, I'm dead. That's what's going on. I'm dead, and this is some sort of a purgatory I'm in, a place between earth and heaven, and I've got to go meet God. I died in that scuba diving accident. And I went next door to another ballroom, because the course was happening in a ballroom. I went to an adjacent ballroom, took all my clothes off. I was going to meet God. And felt God was testing me. And then the police came and I refused to put my clothes on and they arrested me, took me to the psychiatric hospital, right? And I was talking a lot, and they eventually, my family was there, but I still thought I was in some sort of a spiritual process because I felt so good, you know? I still thought I was dead. I thought the whole hospital was actually a spaceship taking me through the universe to another parallel paradise of some kind. But they gave me a forcible injection in my leg, which was not very nice, and weren't really helping me, and I wasn't going anywhere, and I fell asleep. And then about 48 hours later, I think I woke up and I realized, well, I got to get out of here, you know, I got to find a way out. And so I just told them what I thought they wanted to hear, which is that I had a PTSD reaction to this meditation or the course related to my scuba diving accident. And I was very lucky, because within 4 days they let me out, you know. And this went on to be the most important experience of my life at that point. It ended about 7 years of on again, off again depression. And when I went back to work, my salary tripled. All right. So not eventually, but like when I went back to work over the next 3 years, my salary tripled. So life got a lot easier, it got a lot better. I felt more open. Clients, I worked in advertising. Clients mentioned that they felt like I really cared about their business. Everything just got a lot better. And so I can't really remember what your question was in the beginning, but it had to do with spiritual awakening versus mental disorder. And that's kind of how I ended up doing this work. Is not exactly, it didn't happen until 10 years later, but that was my first spiritual awakening, and it looked pretty crazy to the people around me, you know?
Right. No, you're good. No, I did ask the overlap between the bipolar experiences and spiritual processes. But here, yeah, how you got into this, it's still amazing, because I think sometimes not everybody is able to have those type of experiences, those life threatening moments, where you feel, you know, like you're in another place, or like, hey, I checked out of here and something else is happening. I mean, we hear stories about it, but we don't all experience it. So being able to be able to talk to someone who has experienced those things, it's phenomenal. I think it's a big phenomena. I think that there's definitely something that happens in that in-between moment, and it's hard for any of us to kind of understand our process at the time. And we do sound crazy when we're trying to explain it. So like when you were talking about the story and they didn't believe you and they thought you were just being, you know, crazy, it's like, because they don't understand what's happening here or what's going on. And it sounds, you know, it sounds unbelievable in those moments. You know, I think that we all have a moment sometimes like that, but never a life threatening moment to put us in that.
And the life threatening, you're talking about going to the hospital, not the scuba diving accident, right?
Oh, the life threatening part was the scuba diving part, right? Because we thought,
oh,
and then you know, you get there, yeah, and you're like, I died. All of, yeah, this stuff happening afterwards is whatever is happening, yeah, in death at this moment, you know?
Yeah. But that story about the story about being dead, though, only came to me 2 months after the accident. I didn't think I was dead once the accident happened. It was only when I started to have all this stuff unfolding on the course, you know? It was like, oh, that's what happened. I've been dead for 2 months and I didn't realize it. That's what I was thinking. I've been dead for 2 months. I just didn't realize it.
Yeah. Right. No, that does make sense, because we do, I mean, and that, because we do bury trauma. We bury traumatizing experiences. And then when something takes us back to that place, it does put us in a state of hysteria.
Yeah. I thought I was fine. I went out scuba diving the next day and my partner was like, "You okay to go diving?" I'm like, "Sure, no problem. Let's go." I was in the water. Didn't even think about it. Well, but no, my nightmares.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about when you had to go back and remember, because we bury it. And then when we,
sure,
remember it, it's like, you know.
No, but that's, yeah, well, that's what I mean. It was like, it was so buried for me that I was happy to go back in the water the next day. You know, if I had actually felt the implications of what happened, I probably just wouldn't have gone in again, you know? Yeah.
But that's also a state, I think, too, like, because we watch things, or things happen to us sometimes, and we because we bury it so much, because we're like, it's that sometimes we'll just be like, that had to be a dream or something, like that didn't happen. And we just go.
Yeah.
We continue on like it never happened. I'm fine and everything. Mm-hmm. And we get put in states like you were. And then we're like, okay.
Sure, you know? Sure.
And then we're triggered. And then probably the emotion that should have been the reaction at the time is the reaction now in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel. Because sometimes we have a delayed reaction to things.
Sure. Sure.
And I just, I want to go into how you got into the bipolar aspect of helping people with bipolar and your process of helping through their disorder.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, you know, 10 years went by and I changed my life a lot after all that. I finally got out of advertising. I moved to Brazil. My wife's Brazilian. And I was an English teacher, doing fine, doing much better, much happier in life. And then we got a call that her younger niece, and in the book I call her Anna. They're fake names. I got to protect the privacy, but I call her Anna. And she was having some kind of an experience. And when we heard over the phone from her parents what was going on, I was like, well, this sounds like what happened to me. It doesn't sound like, I don't know what kind of mental disorder. I don't know what mental disorders are, but this sounds like a spiritual experience. And when we went up there, she was already heavily medicated. We went to work with her to support her. But she was, with our support, she came back in good shape. And the psychiatrist and psychologist had said that they had never seen anyone recover so quickly, but she was heavily medicated. And then I learned later, I was like, well, how long is she going to be on the meds? And they say it's a couple of months. And I was like, wow, it's going to be so many months. And then I started to do the research and I realized that it was actually probably going to be years, probably her rest of her life, because they had given her this bipolar diagnosis. And then I was just like, hold the phone. I was like, I got to figure out the difference between this thing called bipolar disorder, which I knew nothing about, and what had happened to me, which I, and by the way, with one thing about my thing, I was convinced it was a spiritual experience, but a year after my experience, I found the work of Dr. Stan Grof. He's a Czech psychiatrist, and he had a term that he called spiritual emergency, which is a spiritual awakening process, which is difficult to integrate. And so it can look like schizophrenia, that's what he would call it, right? And that many people get hospitalized for what he called spiritual emergencies. I fit all of his symptoms for spiritual emergency. And so for me, it was like, I had the spiritual emergency. That's how I framed what happened to me. And so when I went 10 years later, when I went to see Anna with my wife, I was like, well, what's the difference between what she's going through and what I'm going through? And then I started to get into the research on the difference between bipolar disorder and spiritual emergency and realized that there was really no clear dividing line. And I learned things like, guess what? There is no scientific evidence that these mental disorders like bipolar, schizophrenia, schizoaffective, or depression have any biological roots. They don't have any scientific proof of that. So there's no biology to back it up like they do cancer or any other disease, you know. And yet when people go to a psychiatrist, they're told that they've got an illness, like a disease. But the exams always come up negative. Your serotonin and your dopamine are within the regular range for normal people. That's what comes up in the medical exams, you know. And I also learned that there were some psychiatrists and psychologists from the late 60s and 70s who actually saw psychosis as an intended reorganization of the psyche. Intended. So from their perspective, they went even further than Grof. They were kind of saying that all psychosis is an intended spiritual emergency. It's all coming for the intention of healing. And so reading and studying all of this, I was preparing to go back to the family and say, look, let's take Anna off her meds. When she goes back into psychosis, we can support this thing. They used to do this in the 70s. They would just be with the person in an empathetic way. And then 5 or 6 days later, they would come through it, right? So I was going in that direction. I was planning on talking to the parents. And just as I was ready to go see the parents, the older sister, Eliana, in my book, she returned from Europe and saw the state of her sister and went into psychosis too. So two sisters had the same psychotic episode, their first psychotic episodes just 4 months apart. But The second sister, Eliana, seeing what happened to her younger sister, came to us first. And we supported her through it with a philosophy like these earlier psychologists had had of being there for the person as opposed to doing something to them. So just being there, being empathetic, being supportive, protecting them, and just letting this psychosis run its course, which is what would never happen within psychiatry, you see. And we had some success. We were with her for 5 days, and then we were able to return her to her family. She was vulnerable, but she was grounded. And then she went on to have two more episodes that summer, and we couldn't help her in the second, but the family agreed to let us help in the third. And after that third episode with us, she returned to university without psychiatric medications. She finished with honors. She came out of school and got a great job, traveled to 11 countries, eventually went to do her master's degree, you know. And so none of that would have happened if she had to return to the psychiatric medications, because the meds just slow you down too much. You know, you got to be sharp when you're in university, right? But seeing the success we had with her there. Now, in the future, she would go on to have other episodes 7 years later, but that's kind of another story, and it's an unfinished story. But at the time, it was like, well, this is my mission in life. This is what I need to do. And then I started my channel, used to be called Am I Bipolar or Waking Up? Now I call it Bipolar Awakenings. But I started to make a lot of YouTube videos about this spiritual dimension and healing potential of bipolar disorder, you know? And that's how I got into all of this.
Okay. Well, I'm very, very intrigued. Very intrigued. Because I have people in my life that have been diagnosed with these things, schizophrenia and bipolar. And they do, I see that they always want to shove all this medication down their throats, you know, and they want to put them in the psych ward. And one of them in particular, I've been around, and it's just like when they do have their episodes, it's kind of like they're in another place. You know, they're not here in the present at the moment, but there's a whole nother life happening, you know, that they're a part of.
You're kind of dreaming. You're in a waking dream, you know, speaking from experience.
Right. And that's kind of what they explained to me. It's like they felt like they were in, you know, they were in a going through life, but they were, you know, they're right here. And I'm like, well, you're right here. This is what's happening right now. But they were having this whole days and nights and events happening and, you know, conversations and, you know, and I'm like, very interesting. But just hearing your perspective of it, it does make a lot more sense to be in that type of place, or having a spiritual awakening, you know, and experiencing that type of, I guess I want to say sensation. I'm not sure how to word it.
Yeah, it's okay. Sensation. Yeah, it's a sensation. All right. But my own experience put me in a position where I could work with people in those states because I wasn't afraid of it because I'd been there, you know?
Right. That's a good place to be in, because being able to understand what the people are actually experiencing and going through, I think it helps them a lot more because they have someone that's actually listening and not trying to tell them that it's something else or this isn't happening, or this isn't, you know, what's going on is actually something else. But I think that puts them in a deeper state, and it causes a lot more frustration, and it doesn't help. It aggravates the situation a lot more.
Trying to bring them back to reality does not help. Doesn't help. But I will say one thing though, which is that this technique of being with people as opposed to doing something with them is very helpful early in the game. If you get them in those first few months, first few breaks that they have with reality, it works. After a while, though, the breaks with reality become like a broken record to a certain degree, and just supporting the psychosis doesn't really work particularly well. And these guys, the psychologists from the 70s who had clinics who supported people in psychosis, they saw that. They had like an 85% success rate with people on first break, but then after that, it got tougher. And so my work with people was really focused on, well, how can we help people who have been in the system for a while? Because they're the only people who are going to reach out to me. I'm not going to get people at first break. They're not going to find me. They're going to be taken by their family to the psychiatric hospital. But what about people who see the spiritual dimension, see that they're working through something perhaps spiritual, trauma-related, and need help? What can we do for them? And so that became where my work.
I don't know, just trying to understand things. And I noticed that when, like I said before, when you're trying to give them a certain narrative or let them know that these things aren't really happening, like it makes them feel more crazy, or like, cause that's the words that they've expressed to me. Like, I feel crazy. I feel unheard. I feel unseen. I feel like no one believes me, you know, like what I'm going through. So I do understand that. I have noticed that, when I have been around, people that are having these awakenings, that when I'm just sitting there and letting them go through what they need to go through, or go through the episode itself and just let it, just making sure that they're staying safe and, you know, and just letting it happen and listening and not trying to tell them that, you know, you're not in reality right now, or like, it makes it easier for them. It does bring them back out. It helps kind of bring them back in to where we are in the present time.
Yeah, yeah. If you can manage to stay in relationship with them, but also keep them protected. And don't forget, you know, often they don't sleep and you need sleep. The most somebody can really support somebody through a process like this is about 6 days. After that, you're completely gassed, you know. So the psych meds do have a role. Sometimes you do have to take people to the psychiatric hospital because we've got limited resources. You know, you're not going to save people, but you can do the best you can and try to validate whatever it is they're going through.
I think that is the best way to help. Because I think, you know, we don't want to make people feel worse. We don't want to make people feel like they're not heard or seen. So
I can see you're going back in your mind and you're thinking about times with your family members and remember, oh man, if I could have done something differently or something like that. I can see it.
Well, it's with me, like, as I go back and I'm thinking about those situations, and like one of the family members, I wasn't around, but like hearing the stories from their family, you know, their mother or one of the other family members I was there, just to hear the things that they said that they were trying to do. And it's like, I knew in the moment when they were telling me, like, well, that was very unhelpful. Like, it was causing more agitation, because as they told me the story, they were saying how much more agitated, you know, the family member was getting. And I'm like, well, at some point we have to stop and we have to listen. I'm like, did you ever stop and just listen? Like, you just let whatever it is that they needed to say or do, and just let them do it instead of trying to force them into not doing something or not talking or not, you know. And it's like, no. I'm like, well, how would you feel if someone did that to you? You know, whether you were diagnosed with something or not, how does it make you feel when people do that to you? Just you being normal, you know, or, you know, to say. So I really want to dive into this deep. Like, I'm gonna read this entire book because it's a very interesting.
Well, I can. One of the first things that really shocked me was I was reading Soteria. It's a book called Soteria, about the Soteria House Clinic, which was run by a psychiatrist in the 70s named Dr. Loren Mosher. And he was a big wig in the APA in the United States. But he had learned from another guy in England named Artie Lang about, you know, this horror, this attitude of supporting people. What he found was that empathetic college undergraduates were better at dealing with people while they were in non-ordinary state psychosis than trained PhDs, PhD psychiatrists and psychologists. And this was in the 70s, don't forget. But the reason was that whenever there was a moment of tension, that the PhDs would pull rank. And they'd be like, hey, listen, I'm the doctor here. You know, you need to listen to me. You're the patient. And they would go hierarchical on things. And that would break the relationship. And it wouldn't be particularly good. When they had undergrads who were screened for empathy, okay, these were very empathetic people, they could just relate to the person and say, look, man, you're scaring me. Do you think you could sit down here? Have something to eat. Let's cook together. Come on, let's go. And having that non-hierarchical bond was very important. And when I read that, I was like, okay, well, if empathetic college undergrads could do this, I could do this. And that's what gave me the guts to go and support Eliana in her episodes. It was like, this doesn't need a big education. You know, it just needs a big heart.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And we need more people like that. I think it'll help a lot of us healing, you know, going through things that we're going through, to have someone that is empathetic. Because a lot of people today don't share that quality. And it makes it very hard to get through situations. Just even being normal, it makes it hard to get through situations. And I know that you have people under your belt, or that it's following in your footsteps. Following in your footsteps, doing this work as well. And I think that's great. Like, and these were people as well that were diagnosed with said bipolar disorder. And they are now functioning and helping others that are supposed to be diagnosed with disorder get through these without having to be on medication lifelong, and being psychiatric hospitals for long periods of time.
Yeah, my second client, Monica Kettler, most of my work I've done in Europe, even though I live in Brazil. My second client, she became a supporter for a lot of the retreats that I would do with people. I would do private retreats, and she would be a supporter for the clients that I would have. And so she sort of learned the ropes with me like an apprentice, but then she also started to work towards getting her degree as an alternative therapist in Germany and a gestalt therapist. And so now she works as a therapist. She's been unmedicated for 10 years. And she's busy. She's a busy one, you know. And then one of the clients that she supported that I was facilitating, a guy named Tim Canote, he's in the Netherlands. And he has a good relationship with a psychiatrist who's the director of a university program there. And they talk, and Tim finally convinced this psychiatrist to do a private retreat for one of the psychiatrist's clients, you know. So we had like psychiatry-endorsed private retreats happening, but instead of me being the facilitator, it was my clients who were facilitating this for somebody else. So this is what I want, you know. You know, Jesus had 12 apostles. I've only got two, but I'm trying to fill the table. You know, I'm looking to... Right. You know, once I get to my 12 apostles, I think I'll be in pretty good shape, you know, and then I can just sit back and relax or get crucified, one or the other.
No.
Kidding.
No, but you know, even if it's one, but that is still more than enough, because I mean, you're reaching people, it's spreading, the awareness is spreading, people are getting the much necessary help that they need and are craving, because I think that they're very much craving real assistance and help through these things. So even with the two, things are happening. The awareness is getting out there. People are learning more about it. These psychiatrists and doctors are becoming aware of the method. So I think that's very amazing, and it's going to be something that's great. And we'll see Mr. Sean Blackwell as the new creator of something wonderful that is helpful.
Let's hope so. I think it's already been written, you know. It's like I'm just following the script. You know what I mean? Like what do you want me to do next? You know, it's kind of like that. I'm asking the higher power, what's next? And right now it's podcasts, funny enough.
As long as you do it and get it out there. If you don't talk about it, if you don't do the work, then it'll never be seen and things will never start happening. So
wonderful. I would say too, can I just say one thing before we continue though, that I think pretty much all the clients that I've done private retreats on have had improvement, medications reductions, improving their lives, being able to hold relationships, and others have come off meds entirely as well. It's just with Tim and Moni, they decided to go the therapeutic route, become therapists themselves. You know, they're the only two that I'm aware of at this point that have made that choice. But, you know, there's others that have gone, you know, my third client, Kirsten Ogard, she had a 20-year history, 11 hospitalizations, and she hasn't been back to the hospital since we worked together. You know?
That's amazing. And even the ones that don't become the therapist, you know, they still are able to spread the message if they, you know, come across other people and they're like, hey, look, I know a guy.
and she has spoken at conferences for me, but in the bigger picture too, she's become a better mother. You know, she's just a much better mother than she used to be. Because what kind of a mother can you be if you're slipping in and out of non-ordinary states? It's very difficult for your children. You know?
Absolutely.
Oh.
You're helping people stay, you know, in the present at the moment and being able to live their lives without having any fears of the medications and the hospital visits and all of that chaoticness that comes along with it. So being able to just breathe and have a normal life, is still very helpful.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, you guys, we're going to get into our quote of the night. Our quote states, sometimes the mind breaks open because the soul is trying to grow. So I want you guys to let that sit with you. Let it ponder. Don't be afraid to let your mind open up to new things, new experiences. I know sometimes new things feel uncomfortable and frightful, but sometimes the best things come out of those moments. So let it grow inside of you and just experience it. Let it be what it is. Did you have any final thoughts for us tonight, Sean, before we head out?
I thought that was a really nice quote. Yeah, sometimes in life you've got to let go, you know. And I would just say, if anyone out there listening is interested in my work, you can check out my website, bipolarawakenings.com, and both of my books, the one we're talking about here and my previous book, Am I Bipolar or Waking Up? They're both available as free PDFs on the website or through Amazon, and links are on the website. So if you want to go to my website, check out my videos that are available from there, and training program, books, and free consultation. There's a lot there.
Absolutely. And all the links will be in our episode notes for you guys to have easy access to as well. We want to thank Sean for sharing your wisdom and your lived experiences. The crossroads of the mental health and spirituality is a place many people are afraid to explore. So the conversations like this, they really make us feel safer, and they help us understand better. And they do, and I feel, give us a peace and a sense of mind. So to our listeners, your emotional world has meaning. Your pain isn't random. Your breakdowns aren't failures. They might be awakenings in disguise. Thank you for joining me tonight. And as always, you guys take a deep breath, breathe, relax. Don't be afraid of what's going on in that brain of yours. And as always, remember, the night always has something to say, and we will see you guys next time.